Hey, it's Doug Kazarian, host of the Behind the Bets podcast. Wake up to the best story you'll hear all day. 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week, where you get an inside look at the most interesting stories at ESPN, as told by the top reporters and insiders on the planet. The breaking news of SportsCenter with the deep dive storytelling of 30 for 30. Today's episode was one I thought our listeners would especially enjoy. Please listen and subscribe to ESPN Daily wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Sports League suffering a big blow with cancellations across the board. It's also a problem for all the sports gambling companies that have turned into big business over the past 2 or 3 years.
Just a few months ago, the sports gambling industry was riding high, with more and more legal places to bet and money pouring in from companies hoping to capitalize on the growing market. Now, with live games on pause, so too is activity for sports books around the world. But amidst the shutdown, bettors have gotten creative, looking for action on everything from Taiwanese hoops to Russian table tennis. Today, we explore how the sharps are getting by and whether the industry's luck will ever return. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Tuesday, April 14th. This is ESPN Daily. Doug, I got a hot tip for you. I live in Los Angeles. It's going to be between 65 and 75 degrees over the next few months. Take it to the bank.
Yeah, just go throw down on it. It'll be sunny. Kind of like, what was that LA Story? Was the old movie with Steve Martin?
Yeah.
The weatherman. He like the automatics just on the same wall every day. I think the odds makers are on to that one, Mina, but we'll try to find some vulnerabilities in the betting market.
Doug Kazarian is a sports betting analyst for ESPN and the host of The Daily Wager. Doug, one of my favorite movie quotes of all time is when Dr. Ian Malcolm in Jurassic Park says, "Life finds a way." And that's kind of how I feel about sports betting right now. Because at a moment when it would seem like there is literally nothing you can bet on, gambling finds a way.
We really do in the betting world. You know, it's certainly been interesting. It has challenged us, but you know, with the beauty of the internet, we are all finding a way to kind of move forward. But obviously, it's a very different sort of tone on everything.
Well, let's go back to the week or the days in which it really started to hit everyone that sports was coming to a standstill, right when the NBA paused games. What were you hearing in the betting world at the time?
Well, it was certainly taking everyone, sort of catching everyone off guard. If you remember, the NCAA had their conference tournaments, and the next day, all these Champ Week games were going to be played with no fans. So in terms of just pure handicapping, a lot of people were trying to get a feel for like what the no fans would sort of have an effect on, just whether it be the over-unders and all that. And then the NBA was postponed for the time being.
The breaking news from the NBA tonight on what will be the final night of the season for a period of time, as play will be suspended following this evening's play.
And then everyone was really sort of taken back because it was such, I mean, it's March Madness. Everything's such a, like, an exciting time of year. And then really kind of sharp guys, professional bettors, started to try to figure this out and got ahead of the curve a little bit, in that they started betting the Brooklyn Nets, which were obviously one of the worst seeds in the East. But if the NBA playoffs gets delayed a couple months, maybe Kevin Durant returns and is healthy enough, and Kyrie Irving as well. So a team that was really expected to be first round fodder all of a sudden could actually be a championship contender. Now we're talking 150-1 odds. So that's sort of how the betting community works. I mean, just the NBA by its nature with the load management is always about angling to see who's subbing in and out, trying to kind of beat the market. So you're trying to get an advantage any way you can, and in all sports. And then the severity of the situation started to set in, and you're like, wait a minute, this might be a really long time here.
So there's news events and things that could be happening in the distant future. But obviously, with sports now, there are far fewer opportunities to bet on games, matches, competitions. But there are some opportunities, right?
You're looking at sports overseas that aren't normally bet, like Taiwan Hoops. They still play in Chinese Taipei. There's some teams out there that have returned. There's Nicaragua baseball going on right now. So we're seeing table tennis in the Ukraine and Russia being bet.
All right, thanks, guys. Sergey Magkov takes on Yevgeny Ilyukin, 4:30 p.m. Eastern start time in the Russian Liga Pro Table Tennis organization. I like Magkov in this matchup here. Give me Sergey Magkov getting the job done for some moneyline cash.
Anything that people can sort of get their sort of fix on is really helpful. So it's been pretty strange to people who are used to betting that just the conventional sports of the NBA and NFL and everything.
Do you think some of the money that would have gone to the NBA or March Madness has been flowing into Russian table tennis?
I talked to one odds maker who kind of oversees a big operation in Nevada, and he says total in one day he gets close to six figures. So that's all the games throughout one day, all the properties, and that includes live betting. Now people can't even watch this, but you can track it online. It sounds like a lot. It's not really that much. But I tell you, there in the offshore world, there is some crazy stuff going on with esports and video games. And I know you had Tyler on your show not too long ago here and talked about just the growth of esports. But the betting in esports is also growing during this downtime.
Is that a fairly new phenomenon?
Well, you know, it was supposed to take off a couple years ago, and it never did. So I would say it hasn't taken off in the States. It's bigger offshore, but just so people understand, it's gamers, right? It's one of the best gamers in the world playing a couple types of video games against other top gamers. But what's also kind of taking storm, and I've just noticed it with the offshore world, not in the States yet, is people being able to bet on just simulated games. Esports is like gamer versus gamer. Then there's just anybody who's played Xbox or PlayStation or whatever. When they play like a sports game, you can kind of, in the setup page, you move your controller to whatever team you want to control. Well, if you don't move your controller at all, the controllers are just in the middle where the computer is. So you can just play each other. The computer, you can just press play and the computer plays itself, which is basically a simulation, just a straight like bell curve outcome. And they are putting point spreads on this. And it's like an hour for a basketball game, 30 minutes for a hockey game. I know, and what this is, and I've had to learn all this, it's on Twitch, all right? So on Twitch, there are different channels. And there is primetime action. There's an NBA one. Some sports books are like MyBookie's offering a channel. There's all different kind of sports and different simulations, all off Madden for NFL. And you could just bet a simulated game. It's not even about anyone playing like esports is. Those are professional players, professional gamers. This is literally just a computer playing itself. Now, is the betting market that tight? Probably not. But it has been fascinating to watch different sports books offshore sort of expand their betting menu each week, realizing that there's a little bit of a demand for this. And if you look at it, what is gaming sort of geared towards? 18 to 34? That's what betting is. So there's a strong overlap with like EA Sports and Madden and all that with the betting community.
So what are some of the weirder things that people are betting on?
Well, that's what's interesting. So just to clarify to our audience, we have 16 states in the U.S. right now that have legal sports betting. Two, actually, the week that we talked about, Champ Week, that had sports go away. So that was a little coincidental. But so sports betting is legal in Nevada and then 15 other states, and New Jersey being one of the more the prominent ones. And then offshore world has a lot more liberties, shall I say, and latitude in terms of what they can offer. It's not as regulated of a betting market. And that's when stuff's getting pretty silly, right? So you can bet on these simulations. They haven't been legalized yet in the U.S. So the simulations all go offshore. But then there's getting really crazy stuff. I mean, you can bet on these coronavirus press conferences, whether it be Trump says X, Y, how long he speaks before questions, things like that. And then you can bet on the Dow Jones. And I'm talking the last two digits of the Dow Jones. So there's like no handicapping involved. It's like it's a pull of a slot machine lever, right? Like there's just nothing. And they're giving you as many options as you can. Again, they want to kind of keep their clientele until sports returns. So yeah, you can bet on the NBA, or excuse me, the NFL draft. You can bet on stuff this coming fall, like the, you know, whatever, Chiefs to win the Super Bowl and other futures that is normal, even the potential Tiger versus Phil matchup. But you can, they're also offering props on like lotteries for various states. Just really ridiculous things that, I mean, it's like the weather. I mean, that my mom used to joke about that when I was in high school, like, oh, he'll bet on anything like the weather. Like, that's actually like where we're at right now.
Really? See, that strikes me as something you could actually, you know, do some research on and make a more educated bet than some of the things you're mentioning.
I haven't dabbled in that because that's obviously not my forte. But like I said, the Dow Jones, I mean, you can kind of handicap that. But when you're talking about the last digit or the last two digits of the Dow Jones, that's just random. Whatever sort, again, they want a betting menu that is has a lot of options. Now, are a bunch of people betting this stuff? Of course not. But you just want to look busy because you don't want to lose it to, you know, someone across the street, so to speak.
All right. After the break, let's talk about how all of this has impacted the betting industry. Doug, you mentioned all of the states where betting is now legal, very responsibly. Thank you for that caveat. But it struck me, you know, there was a lot of momentum in this space over the last few years because of what's been happening in Washington and what's been happening with the industry. Do you think this risks stopping that momentum to some degree?
I actually do, because as you can very well know, it's probably not going to just jump back to normal whenever games do return. But whenever we do get back to games, it doesn't mean like the economy is going to be back. So while I'm optimistic and hopeful and all that good stuff, I just don't know if that disposable income will be there on day one as well. And I think people are just going to be gun shy, whether our unemployment rate's pretty high. So these are definitely concerning times for the sportsbook industry. And I know you and I were having a laugh about sort of what's out there. And this is all sort of entertainment stuff, but in terms of like the U.S. impact and sports books and all those employees, especially in Las Vegas, which is a three shift town because it's a 24-hour town, so you have three shifts, and the community has been really hit hard. I mean, 943 casinos in the U.S. had all been shut down. That was according to the American Gaming Association. 30 gambling facilities, you know, 649,000 gaming employees and casino closures, because it's the not just sports betting, but it's the casinos and then just the hospitality industry. So it's been a real big blow to the sports book and the casino industry. And I actually lived in Vegas for 7 years before ESPN, and I was there during the 2008 financial crisis. And that was obviously a real estate bubble that popped, and nobody felt it worse than Vegas. So I was there and saw it. And it was real tough, but I will even say this, which makes things worse. I mean, that was mostly an American issue, the 2008 hit, but this is global. So we don't. So the Las Vegas doesn't even have the tourism money coming in like they did maybe a decade ago. And it's been a real big blow.
Before all of this went down, the coronavirus pandemic, you and I were talking about doing an episode on March Madness because the NCAA tournament is massive for betting. How big of a deal is it that it didn't happen?
It's huge. And I referenced the American Gaming Association. They did an estimate, and that if things are closed for 2 months, the estimate is $43.5 billion, B as in boy, in economic activity that's generated by casinos that will be lost. It makes sense. I talked to one odds maker, the head of Caesar Sportsbook, and he said that first Friday of March Madness opening weekend, so like day two, but of round one, is the second biggest day of total money bet of the year, the first being obviously Super Bowl. But in terms of just the betting impact, March Madness is just huge. It's just, if you talk about an event, it's bigger than the Super Bowl because it counts so many days.
So the tournament didn't happen, but one event that is still happening is the NFL draft, which has been a godsend to those of us in the NFL content purveying industry. But I imagine also to betting, right? Because there's a lot of betting around that event.
Yeah, that's going to be the first thing that sort of feels like the old days, right? Because we don't need games for the NFL draft. It's a lot of off-season sort of discussion, and we all sort of bet the NFL draft based on the mock drafts that surfaced. Even during this global pandemic, not much has changed. Now, the interview process for the teams and the scouting and all that has changed. We don't have some of the pro workouts, but for the most part, the consumers, the bettors, it's going to feel like nothing's changed. So sportsbook operators that I talk to are anticipating a huge handle. Now, the NFL draft legally in the States hasn't been around for in terms of the option to bet. So until the last couple of years. So each year they've been able to add more options on the betting menu. So inevitably the handle was going to go up no matter what. But now just sort of people chomping at the bit want to sort of fire on draft props.
What have been some of the more interesting prop bets you've seen around the draft?
So you can bet on sort of where, like, the number a guy is picked or which team picks a guy. So, and then you can do total wide receivers in the first round, total number of running backs. I think the wide receiver thing is kind of interesting. 6.5 is the number at Caesars. We've only had 7 wide receivers drafted in the first round in 1 year, and that was 2004. So sort of well before that passing game shift that we saw around 2009, 2010. It was a Larry Fitzgerald year, but still 7 wide receivers in 2004 sort of surprised me. There's a fun prop. It's SEC versus the field in the first round. So who's going to have more players, and the field is -0.5. That means the field has to have 7. So how many non-SEC players? 17 or more versus SEC 15 with all the Alabama, LSU, and Auburn expected to have 1 or 2 guys in the first round. So that's fun. And then there's the total number of quarterbacks. We know the top 3, or we think we do, Jordan Love making it 4, but will there be a 5th? Jacob Eason out of Washington, formerly of Georgia, figures to be the 5th. I guess from the Georgia QB could be 5th as well.
You alluded to this earlier, but even though there's a lot of uncertainty right now about the NFL season, when, whether it'll start, you know, people are still betting on futures, the Super Bowl winner, that sort of thing. Has there actually been more betting on the upcoming NFL season because it's still being scheduled and there's so much little else to bet on right now?
Well, there's always going to be sort of a shot in the arm whenever something kind of happens, like Brady to Tampa Bay.
The contract is signed. Tom Brady, now officially a member of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
So anytime there's news, people like to bet it, whether it be just free agency in general. And as you very well know, Mina, there was a lot of quarterbacks moving teams, and that always sort of moves the needle, so to speak.
So on the whole, Doug, you know, it does sound like betting is finding ways to muddle through this, even with perhaps decreased volume. Do you think the industry is going to change as a result?
Well, it all depends on sports. If sports returns in the way we saw it as of a couple months ago, and all the leagues get back and fans everywhere and all that in due time, I think sports betting will return as well, as long as the economy recovers. But it's going to take some time. I mean, obviously games have to return, and then kind of the economy has to return as well.
You mentioned that a lot of this is contingent on sports returning. Can you bet on when sports will return?
You can also bet on when sports will return. They had props on, like, the Kentucky Derby and things like that. Now there's sort of a demarcation, let's call it, of July 1st. I want to say a couple books are offering before or after July 1st for the NBA and NHL. They're doing NFL September 10th. Like, will they start on time? And you can bet on that. Now, again, limits are really low. Odds change every day with updates. Like I talked about earlier about current events and storylines, if there is one, you can bet on it. We're probably going to see a Tiger King prop bet pretty soon.
Like, who's going to play Joe Exotic? Clearly Billy Bob Thornton. Thanks so much.
You got it. Really appreciate you having me on.
Coming up, why Simone Biles is not like you and me and deserves so much more. Here's another story I want you to know. This past weekend, you may have come across a viral video of American gymnast Simone Biles doing something called the handstand challenge. It's hard to do justice to the video in words, but basically, Simone, who is wearing sweatpants, goes into a full handstand. Then while she's remaining in the handstand, uses her feet to take off her sweatpants as some friends cheer her on. Setting aside the fact that most of us need to be challenged to simply put on pants these days, I enjoy this very much. But it also made me a little sad, because it served as a reminder as we head into the summer that we should be getting excited to watch Biles dominate in the Olympics, which of course have been postponed until next year. This is doubly sad for Biles because, as Neil Payne pointed out in a recent piece for 538, the Olympics timeline has been unusually cruel to her. She is 24 years old, which is young in normal people years, but pretty old in gymnastics. And despite her incredible dominance, she has only competed in one Olympic Games in 2016. Now, that performance alone put her in the conversation for one of the greatest Olympians ever, but you can't help but think of what might have been. In 2012, Biles turned 15 years old, which made her ineligible to compete in the Games that year. The minimum age is 16, and that wasn't always the case. Until 1996, a gymnast only had to turn 15 in the year of the Olympics to be eligible for the senior national team. It seems likely that if Simone had competed that year, she probably would have medaled, because a year later she won her first all-around gold at the World Championships. So, if the rules hadn't changed, Biles would be entering 2020 with two Olympics under her belt, perhaps approaching her final competition. Instead, she is looking at only her second Games, and she has yet to confirm if she'll compete. If she does compete, I imagine she will, she'll be defying the odds. Not counting rhythmic gymnasts, only three female gymnasts over the age of 22 have won any sort of Olympic gold since 1972. And the oldest to win the individual all-around gold in that time frame was Simona Amanar in 2000, who was weeks shy of her 21st birthday. Now, all of that said, I am not betting against Simone Biles, and neither should you. She has not lost an all-around competition since 2013, and as we all just saw, she can beat the pants off anyone. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.